You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Hello, welcome to the Daily Nationalist. This is Matthew Raphael Johnson, and this is being recorded on the evening of February 5th, 2025. And it seems that I have an obligation to deal with Donald Trump's increasingly bizarre plans and ideas concerning the Gaza Strip. Netanyahu was just in Washington. And the more Donald Trump speaks of this, the more unhinged he becomes. So there are a few things going on as of right now. He is turning the Gaza genocide into a real estate deal. Now, you know, prior to this, I rarely used the word genocide. It's overused. But since the war began, Hamas, I'm using it all the time. But there is no other word that could be, you know, and used for this. And this is not an anomaly. This is the essence of Zionism and how Israel functions. And only the Jews are allowed to do things like this. But as far as Trump is concerned, the idea is being pitched as a redevelopment project. The president is looking and has found investors for this. In fact, he's spoken to the King of Jordan and he wants to build these tent cities for the almost 2 million Palestinians who are to be evicted from Gaza, the camps in Jordan, Egypt, and even Syria. Of course, without a thought for their future. Trump said, "You're talking about 1.5 million people. Well, we'll just clean out the whole thing." In fact, just today, he's gone so far as to advocate a wholesale U.S. takeover of Gaza, showing his complete severance from reality. Now, the truth is that Gaza, Lebanon, Jordan, Syria, and even places farther afield are meant to be part of a greater Israel. That will be, at least in part, overseen by the massive American embassy being built, at least initially in secrecy, in Beirut. This will be the second largest embassy on the planet, will employ about 5,000 people, compared to the U.S. embassy in China, which only has about 1,300 employees. And this for a country of roughly 6 million. It will be a control center for the entire region. But Palestinian land is being treated as if it's 1970s Atlantic City. He's talking about casinos and luxury housing. This vile Jared Kushner or want to clear out entire regions to be taken over by Zionist settlers and developers. During this flurry of executive orders, using that excessively bothers me, regardless of how good some of them might be. Trump said this. He said, "I looked at a picture of Gaza. It's like a massive demolition site. That place is really, it's got to be rebuilt in a different way." And he speaks as if a tornado hit the place, not a deliberate and planned attack. And he was asked further about it. He said, "Well, I might, you know, Gaza, it's interesting. It's phenomenal location on the sea, great weather. You know, everything is good. It's like some beautiful things could be done with it. But it's interesting, but some fantastic things could be done with Gaza." Now, he's choosing his words carefully there. But behind it all is that Jews alone can slaughter civilians, have them removed, have them cleansed as a matter of policy. Trump made a big deal about suspending foreign aid for 90 days. Of course, he exempted Israel. But Kushner is a vile human being. At Harvard University last year, Kushner was there at something called the Middle East Dialogues, Jared Kushner in conversation with Tarek Masood. Kushner is absolutely one of the most inarticulate people on the planet. Here's what he said. I mean, you know, obviously the reason they're not, you know, for example, the reason the Egyptians don't want to take the refugees, in addition, of course, there being domestic unrest that could result, or the instability that could result, but there are also real fears on the part of the Arabs, and I'm sure you talked to a lot of them, who think once Gazans leave Gaza, Netanyahu is never going to let them back. Now, when I read this, there's very little punctuation in the official transcript. So it's very difficult to read, and that's really a result of his speech patterns. But the case here is that those who hold the lives of millions in their hands have zero understanding of the people that they're affecting. Kushner continued his stream of consciousness. He sounds like a drunken college guy lounging on the fraternity roof with a t-shirt wrapped around his head. Now let me try to read this as best I can. I'm not sure there's much left of Gaza at this point, so if you think about it, even the construct, Gaza was not really a historical precedent. It was a result of a war. You had tribes in different places, and then Gaza became a thing. Egypt used to run it, and then over time, different governments came in different ways, so you have another war, and you know when wars happen, you know borders are changed historically over time. And so my sense is, I should say, how we deal with the terror threat is there, so I cannot be a threat to Israel or to Egypt, right? I think that both sides are spending a fortune on military. I think neither side really wants to have, you know, a terrorist organization enclaved right between them and Gaza's waterfront property could be very valuable to people who would focus on a kind of building up, you know, livelihoods. You think about all the money that's gone into this tunnel network and all the munitions. If it would have gone into education or innovation, what could have been done with it? So I think it's a little bit unfortunate situation here, but I think from Israel's perspective, I would do my best to move the people out and then clean it up. But I don't think Israel has stated that they don't want these people to move back there afterwards. Now, I think I know what he's claiming here. His inability to express himself shows his ridiculous immaturity. But this is the man advising Donald Trump on these matters. That this was at Harvard shows what passes as Middle East dialogue there. Donald Trump was a little bit more articulate when he was at Air Force One. He was asked on the same issue, at least according to MSM. Trump said he would like to see Jordan, Egypt, and other Arab nations increase the number of Palestinian refugees. That's a misnomer. They're being forced out. They're accepting from the Gaza Strip, potentially moving out enough of the population to, quote, just clean out the war-torn areas to create a virtual clean slate. Trump also said that he ended his predecessor's hold on sending 2,000-pound bombs to Israel. That lifts a pressure point meant to reduce civilian casualties during Israel's war with Hamas in Gaza, which is now halted by a tenuous ceasefire. We released them today, Trump said of the bombs. They've been waiting for them for a long time. Then asked why he lifted the ban, Trump responded, because they bought them. Now, Israel doesn't take orders from the U.S. It's the other way around. Israel will use whatever weapons it has at its disposal. The alleged Biden ban on this weapon was never followed, if it existed at all, because these weapons were used widely since the start of the war. But during his campaign, Trump advocated peace, not increasing global carnage. And using such flippant rhetoric concerning the fate of millions, Trump's credibility can only suffer. Now, from the Zionist point of view, civilian casualties are the point. It's not something to be avoided. But at least for the foreseeable future, the Gaza genocide will continue to feature even more of these 2,000-pound unguided bombs, the so-called MK-84, used in densely populated areas. So the plan is, when enough of them have been murdered or removed, they rebuild the area with condos and private mansions for Jews only. Where do the Palestinians go? Well, they go to tent cities in the places that I've already mentioned. And the International Monetary Fund is already on board. In fact, they've promised to ease Egypt's debt if they play along. And Trump said the same thing to King Abdullah II in Jordan. However, both Jordan and Egypt have put out statements rejecting these proposals. Jordan made it very clear that their steadfast position, I'm quoting them, to uphold the Palestinian presence on their land, it remains unchanged and will never change. That was from the Jordanian foreign ministry last week. The Egyptian foreign ministry stated, Egypt's continued support for the resilience of the Palestinian people on their land and their commitment to their legitimate rights in the homeland in accordance with international law and international humanitarian law. Well, that's not a sentence in the official translation, but its meaning is clear. Today, it's February 5th, Donald Trump came out and said the U.S. wants to wholesale take Gaza over. It made me laugh because Israel has not won that war. Israel, in fact, is losing that war. The Saudis, and this is very dangerous, issued a rebuff of his plan. They reject any attempts to displace Palestinians from their land. The foreign ministry said their country is firm and unwavering. Its commitment to the establishment of a Palestinian state, a real one, not the one that Trump tried to do a few years ago. Netanyahu was in Washington on the 4th, that is to say yesterday. Donald Trump said the U.S. could assume control of the enclave. And he said that he would clear the remains of damaged buildings and transform Gaza into, his words, a Riviera of the Middle East. And of course, said again, Palestinians should be permanently resettled outside of Gaza. The Saudis said they will have nothing to do with this. Unequivocal rejection of any infringement on the legitimate rights of the Palestinian people, they said, whether through Israeli settlement policies, annexation of Palestinian lands, or attempts to displace the Palestinian people from their land. And then they said that you cannot have any permanent peace without Palestinians securing their legitimate rights to statehood. Saudi Arabia said they will not reestablish ties with Israel unless this key condition is met and that it's non-negotiable. The Palestinian ambassador to the UN, Riyad Mansour, said, in fact, today, that rather than being relocated to other countries, the Palestinians in Gaza should be allowed to reclaim their homes in what is now Israel. He said, for those who want to send Gazans to a happy, nice place, those are Trump's words, let them go back, you know, to their original homes inside Israel. There are nice places there, and they'd be happy to return. As of right now, the UN says that about 90% of Gaza's population has been displaced of the war. And of course, Netanyahu is on board for this. He said at the press conference, President Trump is taking this to a much higher level. He sees a different future for that piece of land. He has a different idea. I think it's worth paying attention to. It's something that could change history. Trump's willingness to puncture conventional thinking, thinking that has failed time and again, his willingness to think outside the box with fresh ideas, will help us achieve all of these goals. Trump is the greatest friend Israel has ever had in the White House. You know, Trump acknowledged during this most recent campaign that the first time he was president, people like Sheldon and Miriam Adelson were at the White House, according to him, probably more than anybody, demanding favors for Israel, moving the American embassy to Jerusalem, the U.S. acknowledging Israel's claim to the Golan Heights. Last year, Miriam Adelson gave the Trump campaign over $100 million. More than half the donations for the Republicans come from Jewish sources at all levels of government, 80% for the Democrats. You know, it was exciting back in 2016 when Trump financed his own campaign, but now he's just another politician. Gaza is destroyed because in its failed campaign to destroy Hamas, Israel has targeted civilians, as they always do. There are no hospitals left, so disease is now rampant. From the first day, Israel was inflicting extremely heavy and concentrated bombardments in a densely populated urban environment, solely against civilians. Across Gaza, major buildings have been damaged or destroyed, and Gaza City itself is almost gone. Making matters worse than this, Donald Trump, in one of his executive orders, removed any sanctions allegedly imposed previously on the settler movement. Explicitly, he rescinded Executive Order 14115 on the 1st of February. It was passed on the 1st of February 2024, which authorized the imposition of certain sanctions on anyone who's undermining peace in the West Bank or elsewhere. In other words, the president has fully backed the genocide of Arabs in the Middle East. Of course, there was no sanctions ever levied. These were symbolic things, but and there's really nothing new about this. And one of the key factors here, the founder of Zionism, Theodor Herzl, he died in 1904. He said we should try to spirit the penniless population across the border by procuring employment for it in transit countries, while denying it any employment in our own country. Expropriation and the removal of the poor must be carried out discreetly and circumspectly. He wrote that in 1895. Of course, he's talking about the Arabs. So from the very beginning, in order for Israel to ever come into existence, Jews would have to maintain a sizable majority anywhere they were, which means that Palestinians would have to be evicted. That's been the policy foundation for Israeli leaders from its inception, to remove the native population, to cleanse them from their land by any means necessary. David Ben-Gurion said the same thing. In 1948, the first year of Israel's existence, he says that in many parts of the country, new settlement will not be possible without transferring the Arab Fahin. He concluded the Jewish power in Palestine, which grows steadily, will also increase our possibilities to carry out this transfer on a large scale. Now, I almost don't want to mention it, but that psychotic midget Ben Shapiro wrote an article called Transfer is Not a Dirty Word. This idiot said, he said, well, if you believe that the Jewish state has a right to exist, then you must allow Israel to transfer the Palestinians and the Israeli Arabs from Judea, Samaria, Gaza, and Israel proper. It's an ugly solution, but it's the only solution. And it's far less ugly than the prospect of bloody conflict ad infinitum. Jews don't realize that expelling a hostile population is a commonly used and generally effective way of preventing violent entanglements. There are no gas chambers there. It's not genocide. It's transfer. It's time to stop being squeamish. The Jews are not Nazis. Transfer is not genocide. And anything else isn't a solution. I guess no one told him that when the Israelis use white phosphorus gas, they turn Gaza into an open-air gas chamber. No Arab is going to walk away from their homes without being forced to do so. Shapiro has very little contact with the real world, and he's a Talmudist, of course. And he believes that anyone who recognizes the appalling horror of driving people off their land, forcing them into camps, is squeamish. This is the main reason why he's the public face of acceptable conservatism. And very much like Jordan Peterson, he's meant to channel the right wing into these more socially desirable avenues. But that is the essence of Zionism from its very beginning. You may not have noticed, but the protests against the Israeli regime from numerous areas just began really only a couple years ago, saying stupid things like Netanyahu has assembled the most right-wing government in Israel's history. That's just another misdirection. Netanyahu is no better or worse than anyone else who ran that country. Israeli leaders just played along with the two-state nonsense in Trump's first term, that whole deal of the century that I've talked about at great length, but that's just to buy time. And keep in mind, Israelis overwhelmingly support this sort of policy. They're not innocent bystanders. And they're aware that Netanyahu, it's not just about depopulating Gaza, but the plan is to seize all the land between the Jordan River and the Mediterranean. So there's nothing special about this guy, though. This has always been the issue. This goes to the heart of both the Talmud and Zionism. And you notice none of this has anything to do with Hamas. It's just a pretext. They cannot destroy Hamas. If anything, Hamas has grown in strength. Many of you have heard of Plan Dalet, the initial roadmap for ethnic cleansing drawn up in 1948. It was a blueprint used by the Israeli army to expel Palestinians from their homeland during the country's establishment in 1948. It was a, quote, strategic ideological anchor and basis for expulsions by front, district, brigade, and battalion commanders. Of course, today it would be called ethnic cleansing. It was officially adopted on March 10, 1948. It specified which Palestinian cities and towns would be targeted and gave instructions for how to drive out the inhabitants and destroy their towns. It called for, quote, the destruction of villages, especially those population centers which are difficult to control continuously. The population must be expelled outside the borders of the state. Three quarters of them at the time, about 750,000 people, were forced from their homes and made refugees during Israel's establishment. Their homes, land, and belongings were systematically destroyed or stolen, denied the right to return. More than 400 Palestinian towns and villages, including very large urban centers, were destroyed or repopulated with Jews. To this day, a huge number of Palestinians live in refugee camps that were established then. It's the terrorizing of an entire population, relentless bombing, destruction of vital infrastructure, hospitals, full blockade, starting from 2006, if not before, of food, water, and medical supplies. And now a mass exodus to the southernmost parts of Gaza at gunpoint, this is a policy of long standing. This is why the tent cities that exist, the IDF is bombing them. They're full of unarmed civilians. They pose no threat to Israeli security. Hamas was a pretext. It's meant to terrorize an entire population into fleeing. That's how Netanyahu and Zionism in general wants to seize a land that will be incorporated into Greater Israel. However, we'll get to here in a minute, it requires a massive increase in Israel's security, structures, and manpower, which it cannot do. But it's not just Gaza. A few weeks ago, January 21st, in fact, of this year, Netanyahu said that Israel's latest operation in the West Bank, like he always says, is aimed at eradicating terrorism, extensive and significant. This is called Operation Iron Wall. Yet another large-scale military raid into Jenin in the West Bank that killed 12 Palestinians and injured 40 on the first day. Jenin has been attacked many times. It's been severely damaged. It's largely a refugee camp. No one's really looking there at the moment. I talked about this in June of last year. It's not just the bombing attacks, but the incursions with bulldozers had destroyed every street and building that mattered. The governor of Jenin said, "The Israelis are besieging the hospitals and cutting off the city from the refugee camp, which has become a military zone with no access. Neither the civil defense, nor the ambulances, nor the journalists can go and see what is happening." So when cutting off access to a refugee camp is a major issue, you know they have reached rock bottom. But where did these men come from? The 22nd of January, units from the IDF withdrew from Gaza and were redeployed to the West Bank, which is not a good sign for the Israeli army. Jenin has for decades been a center of resistance and, of course, the target of raids. Numbers are very hard to come by, but the Israeli army said 10, what they call militants, have been killed during the operation early on. They said 8 the first day or two. The implication, of course, is that they're armed, but that's rarely true. Other West Bank cities have been targeted by Iron Wall. Between 25 and 50 have been arrested since January 21st. At least according to official numbers, and that's only over the first week. But since the war began in October of 2023, Hamas has been able to recruit substantially from this area, and they're quite motivated to join the resistance. The Palestinian Authority in the West Bank, of course, has been losing control. They're unpopular. They've lost support to Hamas that favor the armed struggle for very obvious reasons. The PA is kind of the governing body of some areas of the occupied West Bank, but it's mostly under Israel. Israel ordered it to crack down on some militants in and around Jenin, and the PA had lost control in that area. But in the occupied West Bank, the IDF controls security. I guess by now the PA handles things like trash collection, traffic tickets, and corpse disposal. And it's not just the state. Deadly attacks by Jewish settlers on Arabs have escalated in the West Bank, and the two things go together, raids and settlers. As you probably know, both Smotrich and Ben-Gvir are both from the settler movement. I've spoken of the settlers many, many times. They're murderous fanatics. They've been armed and financed explicitly by Jews worldwide, as well as the state now. But once the so-called ceasefire came into effect, they then immediately began attacking Palestinian villages with greater frequency, doing what they always do, burning homes and farms to the ground. General Herzi Halevi, the IDF, said on January 21st that his men killed 794 militants in the West Bank since the war in Gaza began. What he said was, in most cases, we thwarted the threat in advance before the terrorists could reach Israeli citizens. We're to take his word for it. Now, speeches like that or press releases, they rarely contain even an accidental amount of truth. But Americans seem to accept explicit propaganda as if it came from years of scholarship. Of course, we know how they define what a terrorist is, but it's only the Israeli army that deliberately targets civilians. Very few of those killed have been armed. But, you know, claiming that they're terrorists headed out to kill Israeli civilians, it's boilerplate. It's hackneyed slogans for official press releases. The head of the Palestine National Initiative, a guy by the name of Mustafa Barghouti, yet again, speaks of ethnic cleansing, now concerning the Jenin camp in the West Bank. He said that the occupation is committing a dangerous ethnic cleansing operation in Jenin, forcing civilians and families to leave their homes on foot after subjecting them to humiliating repression and searches. This is a reflection on statements by the occupation army's chief of staff, Herzi Halevi, stating that the repressive goals and practices are similar between Gaza and the West Bank, as the latter is being subjected to a campaign of collective punishment that includes checkpoints, arrests, and abuse. And the UN tends to agree for the 9 millionth time that it issued a report on the unlawful use of force. Multiple airstrikes, random shooting at unarmed residents attempting to flee, but that's ordinary. You hear it so commonly, it doesn't mean much anymore. The Talmudic mindset that informs these actions, plus Jewish control of the Western press, means that these guys have no incentive to restrain themselves. It's not Netanyahu, it's not settler racism, colonialism, as the cause for this violence. It's the Jewish Talmud and the mentality that it generates. And until this is widely known, no one can make sense out of what's taking place there. Keep in mind that Israel is considered a model democracy with these policies firmly in place. Caitlin Johnstone reported on the 31st that Israeli forces killed a 5-year-old girl in an airstrike. She was sitting on a cart pulled by a donkey near the Nusrat refugee camp. Now, their official justification is that the cart was traveling on a road that hadn't been authorized for passage. In their press release, they said, in central Gaza, an Israeli military aircraft fired to distance several suspicious vehicles that were moving northward into an area that is not authorized for passage according to the agreement. I don't know what agreement they're talking about. This is their justification. It's like they use weaponry as a form of communication. The Zionist mine shooting is a form of a cattle prod. And all the thousands of incidents of shooting Arabs, they justify this as defensive, some alleged threat, inventing details as they go. It's just boilerplate rhetoric that is in place of an explanation. But the depopulation of Gaza is connected to the idea of Greater Israel, which now is a mainstream issue. Sometimes it's justified on religious grounds the Jews generally don't accept. But when people like me spoke of Greater Israel years ago, the media would dismiss it as some anti-Semitic nonsense. But now it's discussed in mainstream Jewish circles. Especially since the tragic collapse of Assad's government in Syria, the phrase Greater Israel has appeared in mainstream Israeli media, even primetime television. Now, Israel has dropped all of its masks and its pretense to sanity. As I've written elsewhere, the CIA-backed militants in Damascus have already said that they are pro-Israeli or they won't fight Zionism. So we know who controls these groups. But it was back in 2009 that the British Guardian admitted all of this. That Greater Israel, the creation of this large empire in the Middle East, was a matter of both religious and secular right-wing nationalists. They even admitted back then that this idea serves as a motivating force in mainstream politics to effectively turn the Palestinians into aliens on their own soil, and that's their words. Yet, men have gone to prison for mentioning this in the UK, for example, under its incitement laws. I want to point something out. The ridiculous leftist magazine, The Nation, they're all of a sudden pretending to condemn Israeli policy, but what they're saying is this push to establish Greater Israel, they say, is, quote, the central ideological goal of Benjamin Netanyahu's Likud party. They're careful to add two modifiers, Netanyahu and Likud. Now, the statement is technically true, but it's a form of damage control. I mean, The Nation is partly a Jewish publication. The damage control is trying to push off decades of this onto one man, Netanyahu, like they tried to push off Marxist genocide onto one man, Stalin. In both cases, these genocidal policies were inherent to the system. They were never the creation of a single man. The reason that they point out Netanyahu and Likud implies that these policies are abnormal and that Netanyahu is an aberration. And of course, that's not true. 2018, before the war, Israel passed the Nation State for the Jewish People Law. It enshrines the development of Jewish settlement as a national value. This kind of thing they would condemn anywhere else. The state, they say, in this law, is legally obligated to encourage, to promote the establishment and consolidation of settlements and occupied land. But that, of course, is just a formalization of a policy that's been carried out for a long time. That somehow the law is based on this exclusive and inalienable right to territory as far away as Saudi Arabia. I want to note that that particular part of the text does not show up in the official English translation, meaning that they're hiding it. But now, Jews all over the place, especially in Israel, are talking about these expansionist plans, especially since the fall of Assad. December 8th of last year, Netanyahu spoke from an army observation tower in the Golan Heights. He took credit for Assad's fall. He was a little worried about the fallout from the collapse of the Separation of Forces Agreement of 1974, that's sometimes called the Agreement on Disengagement between Israel and Syria. It was signed after the Yom Kippur War in 1973. Both sides agreed that they wouldn't engage in military operations against the other from their shared border along the Heights. Of course, it's a dead letter now, because where the former Syrian army once was, the IDF and settlers now are. In early December, the IDF invaded Syria to annex the buffer zone mandated by the agreement, which, of course, is Syrian territory. There were four objectives that the defense ministry ordered them to carry out. Number one, to secure Jewish control over the buffer zone and any other nearby strategic position. Number two, to establish a security zone extending beyond that old buffer zone, removing the so-called terrorist infrastructure that could pose a threat, while establishing contact with local Druze communities and others. Number three, to immediately end any reestablishment of Iranian arms smuggling to Lebanon through Syrian territory. And four, to destroy strategic heavy weapons throughout Syria, including air defense networks, missile systems, and coastal defense installations. I think it's interesting that they pointed out the Druze. This is a Gnostic sect. They generally supported Assad, but only to protect themselves against the Islamic fundamentalists who always hated them. They don't pretend to be Islamic, but now with Assad gone, they're vulnerable to attack. There are about 700,000 in Syria, 140,000 in Israel. They're close to the Kabbalah. They've cooperated with Jewish mercantile interests in the past. They've never been anti-Zionist. Maybe they could serve Tel Aviv under these circumstances, and many today are seeking Israeli citizenship. They realize that they're overstretched and are looking for other people that they could use. Kurds in some places, these weirdos elsewhere. After their invasion of Syria, the IDF did what they always do. They ordered the population to hand in any weapons, to prepare for searches of their homes. Any resistance would be met with a bullet. They had drones and loudspeakers saying this. They, of course, depopulated villages as they always do. And when that failed, more coercive measures were used. December 15th and 16th, they tried to depopulate several Syrian villages in the Golan Heights. They resisted. So then the Jews began destroying all utilities to the area. So they were left without power, water, sanitation. And then the Israeli government said they're going to expand settlements in the Golan, which is why these evacuation orders were given in the first place. He says he wants to double the Jewish, Netanyahu wants to double the Jewish population there. Despite the fact that these Islamic militants that took Damascus were a joint Israeli-American creation, Tel Aviv loves the idea that they could still pretend they're a threat and they could be used to justify further depopulation measures. Well, by the 18th, about 150 Syrian families have been forcibly expelled, but that's just the start. Israeli military prevented Syrian farmers in places like Maria and other places near the Golan from accessing their fields or equipment. And today, the ethnic cleansing by the Jews is so commonplace and ordinary that it's taken for granted. December 4th, the Times of Israel published a weird editorial that said, Israel's exploding population urgently required Lebensraum, and by the way, they use that word. It's claimed that Jewish population was projected to grow to 15.2 million by 2048. I don't know where that came from. It is certain that they are almost entirely false, or at least insanely optimistic, but demography matters. This war of attrition is being done with how many babies are being born. That's why removing these people is very important. There is no explosion. The Jewish population, if anything, it's going down. because you have a substantial out-migration. West Bank Palestinian population is roughly 3 million. Gaza, at least before the war, was around 2. There's been an uptick in Jewish birth rates, but their death rate is high too. Keep in mind, though, that the Arab population is far younger on average than the Jewish population, and it is growing faster. So this is just an invention that they could use to justify this expansion. Now, keep a few things in mind here now. I've said a lot here. Donald Trump lives in fantasy land. But Israel is not in any position to carry out these absolutely insane plans. Israel's won nothing so far. The plans mentioned are based on an almost irrational optimism and an overestimation of the regime's capabilities. Donald Trump is talking like transferring millions of people can be done with ease and without resistance. Other than the fall of Assad, there hasn't been a single clear-cut Israeli victory at all. They have not defeated Hamas. They've suffered huge losses in their fight against both them and Hezbollah in Lebanon. Israel lies about their losses like most countries do. The IDF is beyond overstretched. So I don't know what Netanyahu's talking about. Settling, how many Jews are there? They're going to settle these huge areas at the Golan, parts of Syria. As I already said, the Greater Israel idea requires a huge investment in security, infrastructure of all kinds, and a huge increase in manpower to even begin, let alone to be maintained. In reality, Hamas is in power. They'll stay there. They're increasingly popular. Hezbollah remains strong and well-armed, and both are growing in numbers. These bodies are far more legitimate and popular than the governments active in the air, certainly the U.S. Even more than that, the Palestine Authority has been exposed as an absurd, pathetic arm of the IDF. The Israeli Defense Forces, the Army's casualties, are at an absolute minimum twice as high as Tel Aviv is willing to admit. December of 2023, the war hadn't been going on for that long, Tel Aviv absurdly claimed 75 military deaths. Hamas, however, gave the much more realistic figure of almost 2,500 after 2 months. But given the scale of the invasion, 75 can't be taken seriously. The IDF does admit, though, that a full 20% of these came from friendly fire. We can't find neutral figures in a war like this. And I should note that the American Special Forces were there on the day Israel invaded the West Bank, invaded Gaza. The special forces from the U.S. were there to free hostages, but according to Colonel Douglas McGregor, retired U.S. Army, they were shot to pieces and took heavy losses, and they were driven out. So the myth of Israeli invincibility has yet again been shattered. Israel has been in a depression economically for quite a while, while Iran's economy continues to grow, contrary to the online myth-makers like the Caspian Report, of course, with plenty of Chinese and Russian assistance. Hezbollah maintains its competence and discipline, and it continues to inflict heavy losses. Yemen proved that it could disrupt global shipping. I haven't mentioned Turkey yet. They have condemned the Gaza genocide over and over again. But it seems her very existence makes this the population agenda almost impossible. We realize now that Assad was the linchpin of the resistance, at least locally. His loss is a tragedy that will cost many lives. But Tel Aviv is in serious trouble, let alone the U.S. Contrary to claims of this population explosion, tens of thousands are fleeing every year, both due to the ongoing attacks on Israel, as well as its economy in depression status. And it takes a while. It's like, you know, the American military failures, it's taking a long time to seep into the American subconscious. The IDF's failures are doing the same. It takes a while to seep into the Israeli subconscious. As far as anyone can tell, they've lost the war in Gaza, which is why they've had to shift men to the West Bank. This is a government that ties its very existence to military dominance and control. So these failures are changing how Israelis think of the world. They can't destroy the Palestinians or the Palestinian cause, which means that Israel is condemned to endless war. Her reputation has been damaged beyond repair, certainly cannot take the moral high ground on anything. And as of right now, in the public arena, to support Zionism is to support the slaughter of Arab children. Keep in mind, too, that Netanyahu is presently on trial in Israel and remains very unpopular. The war has proven America's moral bankruptcy, for those who have never noticed it before, not to mention Israel's doctrine of racial supremacy, maybe unveiled for the first time. It's revealed the Talmudic mentality, if not by name, that informs the pathological Jewish machinery of genocide and self-worship. The silencing of dissent across the West has been noticed by the mainstream, to their shock and surprise. Greater Israel and Gaza as the new Riviera, these are fantasies. It's based on ignorance and assumptions that cannot work in the real world. A world, by the way, the regime has little contact with. Thank you, everyone, for listening. I'll talk to you next week. Bye-bye.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.